not backing down.
Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, March 6, 2017. A lot of bad dudes out there. That's what Donald Trump tweeted after the announcement of his new revised travel ban from six Muslim-majority nations. Iraq is not included in the revised travel ban. Rebecca Miles has the story.
The Trump administration issued a new executive order on Monday, temporarily blocking travel to the U.S. for residents of six Muslim-majority countries, pending revision of visa procedures. The previous travel ban issued in January was blocked in federal courts. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, and Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the new executive order to reporters. Rex Tillerson.
The executive order signed by the President earlier today, protecting the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States, is a vital measure for strengthening our national security. It is the President's solemn duty to protect the American people. And with this order, President Trump is exercising his rightful authority to keep our people safe. As threats to our security continue to evolve and change, common sense dictates that we continually reevaluate and reassess the systems we rely upon to protect our country.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
This executive order seeks to protect the American people as well as lawful immigrants by putting in place an enhanced screening and vetting process for visitors from six countries. Three of these nations are state sponsors of terrorism. The other three have served as safe havens for terrorist countries, countries where governments have lost control of their territory to terrorist groups like ISIL or Al-Qaeda and its affiliates.
The order blocks new U.S. visas to citizens of Iran, Libya, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen for the next 90 days. Iraq, which was included in the January ban, was left off the list this time after the government in Baghdad agreed to increase cooperation with the U.S. on background checks for its citizens applying for visas, according to AP. Tillerson thanked the government in Baghdad for working with the State Department on improving vetting.
Iraq is an important ally in the fight to defeat ISIS, with their brave soldiers fighting in close coordination with America's men and women in uniform. This intense review over the past month identified multiple security measures that the State Department and the government of Iraq will be implementing to achieve our shared objective of preventing those with criminal or terroristic intent from reaching the United States. I want to express my appreciation to Prime Minister al-Abadi of Iraq for his positive engagement and support for implementing these actions. The United States welcomes this kind of close cooperation with countries in every region of the world who share our commitment to national security.
The new order also imposes a 120-day halt on refugee admissions from the six countries. Secretary John Kelly said legal permanent residents will not be affected.
This executive order is prospective in nature. Its focus is on preventing the entry of new foreign nationals from the six designated countries. Accordingly, it is important to note that nothing in this executive order affects existing lawful permanent residents or persons with current authorization to enter our homeland.
The new order also includes exemptions such as business or medical travel and gives room for waivers on a case-by-case basis. In the 90-day review period, Homeland Security is supposed to define a new set of requirements for travel to the U.S. and recommend restrictions for countries that do not comply. Sessions.
This executive order responsibly provides a needed pause. We can carefully review how we scrutinize people coming here from these countries of concern.
Groups that oppose the original travel ban have vowed to protest the new one as well, calling it religious discrimination. There's one rally planned for Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. Peace Action's executive director, John Rainwater, called the executive order, quote, a Muslim ban with a fresh haircut, end quote, and said that's no evidence that banning travellers based on nationality actually protects anyone. Last week, MSNBC obtained leaked intelligence documents from the Department of Homeland Security that showed that more than half of 88 foreign-born terrorists were radicalized after living in the US for more than 10 years. The report cited case studies where a person became radicalized because they became isolated from their community or felt slighted by comments made about Muslims domestically or through witnessing the actions of the US overseas. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
The ACLU said this new order is still a Muslim ban and it is still unconstitutional, and they say they will keep fighting it. They want to make one thing crystal clear. The only way to fix a Muslim ban is to get rid of it. Trump can't clean up his discriminatory intent simply by rewording the order. Prejudice rewritten is still prejudice, says the ACLU. The low-key Trump administration rollout was in contrast to the first version of the order, which Trump signed a week after his inauguration in a high-profile ceremony at the Pentagon's Hall of Heroes, as Secretary of Defense James Mattis stood by. Meanwhile, Trump's travel ban has been stoking fear among immigrants. In upstate New York, a social media hoax warning of raids sent fear through the Hudson Valley's Latino community in mid-February. It highlights anxiety felt by many local immigrants since the election of Donald Trump. The hoax said raids would take place at Walmarts and along a corridor home to a Latino supermarket and a number of businesses owned by or catering to the city's Spanish-speaking population. Then rumors spread that ICE raids had taken place, with ICE agents snapping dozens of suspected illegal immigrants on the streets of Kingston. In fact, as reported by the Sorgatis Times, no large-scale roundups in the Hudson Valley took place, but this points to the very real fear and panic caused by the Trump administration with his executive orders on immigration. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, speaking about the travel ban, referenced 9/11.
Last week, the Department of Homeland Security celebrated its 14th anniversary, first opening its doors on 1 March 2003. This secretariat was established in response to the devastating attacks of September 11th, when foreign terrorists turned a beautiful but ordinary day into a nightmare. Those attacks taught us that we could not take our nation's security for granted, that Homeland Security must be our top priority, and that we needed to overcome our collective inability to connect the dots of intelligence and arrange them into a more comprehensive picture of the threats posed to America and our way of life.
Connect the dots. No mention was made that 15 of the hijackers that horrible morning were from Saudi Arabia, or that billions of dollars worth of bombs were sold by the U.S. to the Saudis as its military carries out airstrikes in neighboring Yemen, one of the banned countries. Trump's new travel ban comes amid allegations by Donald Trump that Barack Obama during the election campaign tapped phones at Trump Tower. Nasty, anti-Obama tweets came from Trump, and that followed Attorney General Jeff Sessions recusing himself from investigations into whether Russia meddled in the presidential election campaign. Sessions recused himself because he got caught. It was revealed that he lied to the Senate during his confirmation hearing, where he said he had no contact with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. Trump was reportedly fuming over the weekend. One person who spoke with Trump over the weekend said Trump personally felt let down that his senior staff were unable to fight back against the story. He also suggested he felt that Sessions' move to recuse himself from any investigation into administration links to Russia felt like an admission of defeat. Vladimir Putin's spokesperson today said claims by Trump that his phones were wiretapped by Obama during the 2016 election campaign are a purely domestic matter for the U.S. Dmitry Peskov told reporters that the Kremlin should not be in any way linked to U.S. domestic issues and doesn't have the slightest inclination or intention to be associated with these affairs. He blamed mainstream U.S. media for not allowing Trump to even talk about improving ties with Russia, saying, "We are witnessing a massive battle in the U.S. right now, the oligarch media against the U.S. president and his new administration. He is afraid not just to raise his head and talk about Russia, he's afraid to utter the very word, and for the members of his team, any mention of Russia is a high-profile risk." And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Over the weekend, parents, students, and public education advocates marched throughout New York State to bring concerns to the attention of public officials. They are worried over threats to public education from the Trump administration, and they want funding promised public education by the Cuomo administration. There were marches in Schenectady, Kingston, Rochester, Syracuse, and Long Island. And here in New York City, public school supporters with parents and teachers marched to Governor Cuomo's office. Matt Bailey was there, and he sends this report.
$4.3 billion is the amount education advocates say the state owes public school districts. This is to provide a sound basic education, which is what the New York State Constitution requires. Mara Rahav was at the march. She teaches in Brooklyn.
I'm a per diem substitute teacher, and I've seen a lot of injustice in our schools, and I want justice for our students, and unfortunately it seems like our schools are all about budget cuts and not about actually serving the students.
Rahav is against Donald Trump's new education secretary, Betsy DeVos, who champions vouchers and charter schools.
She shouldn't be Secretary of Education because she wants to kill public education. She wants everything to be charter and private. And she doesn't believe in science, and she calls herself a good Christian, but she's against poverty. She's not against poverty, she's against the poor. She demonizes the poor as people who are lazy and do not deserve government services.
Jenny Gage, whose children attend public schools in Brooklyn, wants to ensure that the kids throughout her district have equal access to high-quality education choices.
Right now, we face a lot of problems throughout the city. We are the most diverse school system, the largest school system in the United States, and yet we have problems with incredible inequalities as far as segregation and just in unequal access to resources and quality education in the state.
For Rahav, what's needed most is more money.
We don't have the funding to serve our students. I was in a school the other day where it's supposed to be a special ed and general education teacher in the room at all times. There was only a general ed teacher since the beginning of the year. That's 6 months. This would never happen. This was in Bedford-Stuyvesant. This would never happen in a middle-class neighborhood because the parents would be up in arms. But our parents don't know their rights. Our parents don't have the time, don't have the support, and they can't advocate for their students, so we need to advocate for them and be their voice.
Marchers are also calling for free college tuition, designating schools as sanctuaries that will not aid federal officials in detaining or deporting students, and measures to keep young people out of the prison system. Matt Bailey, WBAI News, New York.
In other news, Donald Trump and his administration have reiterated their intention to roll back Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. This doesn't sit well with millions who are benefiting from President Obama's health care reform. Armand Echeverry went out to a recent National Day of Medical Student Activism, and he sends this report.
Healthcare is a human right. We will march. We will fight. Healthcare is a human right.
Medical students, deans, and faculty from across New York City gathered outside Rupert Murdoch's News Corp on 6 as part of a National Day of Medical Student Activism. The aim was to stand in solidarity with millions of Americans at risk of losing their health care coverage if the Affordable Care Act is repealed. This means that 20 to 30 million Americans could lose health insurance. Kate Robbins is executive director of PNHP, Physicians for National Health Program. She says most of the expansion and access to insurance coverage was through Medicaid and a New York program called the Essential Plan. Both were funded through federal dollars that would be eliminated.
If the Republicans move forward with repeal, in addition, the subsidies to buy private health insurance could be eliminated, so that the folks who currently get insurance on the individual market would no longer be able to afford to purchase that insurance. So it would be pretty devastating to many people who rely on these programs.
Robbins and other medical professionals with Physicians for a National Health Program support a universal comprehensive single-payer national health program. Camille Dubé is a lead medical student organizer unsettled by the repeal of Obamacare.
We are denouncing ACA, Affordable Care Act, and we're calling on a bipartisan Congress to really save patients. So that's the bottom line, to save patients. We do not want some poorly thought out replacement. What we want is the Affordable Care Act to stay, and we want a bipartisan plan to improve the Affordable Care Act.
According to the New York Times, rates under Obamacare have been rising. The most popular choice, the average mid-lane Obamacare plan, cost 22% more in 2017 than in 2016. And while 80% of people under Obamacare receive subsidies, the question remains as to what will happen to the 80% with no replacement.
From what we've seen of the Republican proposals, nothing guarantees that people will be able to get the health care that they need when they need it. And I think even with the Affordable Care Act, you know, we have such significant barriers to care, usually in the form of financial barriers.
Robin says that's why PNHP advocates for universal medical care for all plans, so everyone would be 100% covered and there would be no co-pays or deductibles. She says it would be funded through a progressive tax, so people wouldn't be worried about how they are going to pay for it. In addition to concern over GOP Congress, there is concern over Health Secretary Tom Price. He has been working to repeal Obamacare since it was enacted.
But the plans that Tom Price and the HHC Secretary Tom Price and the entire Republican Congress are trying to enact will actually increase premiums more and further segregate care in cities like New York City, where you have a huge dichotomy between people on public insurance and private insurance. We do not want privatized Medicare. We do not want to sabotage care for the safety nets in the cities like this.
Charlotte Austin is one of the protesters at the die-in. She's a third-year medical student at Mount Sinai Hospital. Dubé says right now in New York City, we unfortunately have a segregated system of care where patients are shifted between safety net hospitals and specialty centers like academic centers based on their insurance status.
There's a link between racism and the insurance system. And once a patient gets to the specialty center, like a big Mount Sinai and NYU, even then they're shunting between clinics, between patients that have public insurance like Medicaid and patients that have private insurance, where it's two separate systems of care. Now, if Trump gets his way and we repeal the Affordable Care Act, that segregated system of care will only get worse because of privatized insurance and privatized Medicaid. So right now, what we're hoping for is, knowing that healthcare is a human right, we need to push and denounce ACA repeal so that we can have more insurance for more people and try to get at the racism that's prevalent in New York City. Because we know that if patients have insurance, there will be better outcomes for people of color. We don't think that insurance alone is the only factor in decreasing racism in the healthcare system, but it's a major factor.
People over profits!
Whether the Affordable Care Act can be amended to include Medicare expansion through a universal healthcare system remains to be seen. According to Physicians for a National Health Program, what's needed is a healthcare system which is treated as a public good. They say this can be accomplished by getting the market out of it entirely. Armand Echeverry, WBAI News, New York.
And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI, in New York. In New York politics, it's another busy week, and as Ben Max of Gotham Gazette tells us, much of the focus is on New York City and New York State budgets.
It's budget season, and that means ongoing negotiations behind the scenes and in public, both in Albany and New York City, as state budget negotiations continue ahead of an April 1st deadline, and city preliminary budget hearings at the City Council get going in earnest this week. A city budget is not due until July 1st, and much of what the city allocates in its new budget will depend on both federal funding and state funding. In the meantime, though, the New York City Council is evaluating Mayor Bill de Blasio's preliminary budget plan, and there's a variety of specific departmental budget hearings throughout the week this week. Those include, for example, the Mayor's Office of Contracts on Tuesday and the Department of Cultural Affairs on Wednesday. City politicians are also reacting to the Trump administration, though. For example, public advocate Letitia James is making an announcement on Tuesday in Foley Square about actions her office is taking related to Trump's plan to build a border wall along the southern border. On Wednesday, it's A Day Without a Woman nationally, and that will be celebrated in New York City by the New York City Council's Women's Caucus, a 12-member body led by co-chairs Councilmembers Lori Cumbo and Helen Rosenthal, and they're having a rally at City Hall at noon on Wednesday. Also to watch for this week is Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina, who heads to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest Education, where she and one deputy will present on New York City's Equity and Excellence Education Agenda. On Thursday evening, the New York City Parks Department continues its Parks Without Borders discussion series, which is hosted by City Parks Commissioner Mitchell Silver. And also Thursday evening, the Citizens Budget Commission, the nonpartisan budget watchdog, holds its annual dinner, and this year the CBC is honoring Senator Schumer, who, of course, has an even raised national profile now as Senate Minority Leader and the main voice of resistance against President Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress. And lastly, to highlight, there are two forums for Republican mayoral candidates here in New York City. Don't forget, there are elections coming up this fall, and the GOP and Democratic mayoral primaries will be in September. The GOP field is still a bit unclear as a couple of potential candidates haven't officially declared, but rumored and declared candidates are participating in forums, and there will be two this week. We have all the details at Gotham Gazette and a full rundown of other events to watch this week. For WBAI, this is Ben Max.
In other news, members of Native American tribes from around the country are gathering in Washington, D.C. for 4 days of protests against the Trump administration and the Dakota Access oil pipeline. It will culminate with a Friday march on the White House. Starting tomorrow, tribal members and supporters plan to camp each day out on the National Mall, with teepees as ceremonial fire, cultural workshops, and speakers. Native American leaders also plan to lobby lawmakers to protect tribal rights. Earth Mom reports.
On February 22nd, Ocheti Shekone, the largest water protector camp at Standing Rock, was evacuated by the BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs. Several days later, Sacred Stone Camp, the original Water Protector Prayer Camp, which opened April 1, 2016, faced the same evacuation. Water Protector Casey Holland said that the evacuation of the Sacred Stone Camp was not expected.
It came as a surprise to us. It was our belief that we'd been served with a 10-day eviction notice and that we had 10 days to respond to that, so the response was filed. And at that point, we all expected it was tied up in some sort of legal ping pong. But while the landowners were away and Ocheti had rolled into our camp, they used the excuse of weapon suspicion to want to come in and inspect and to take control of the land temporarily. And it went surprisingly peaceful. I was worried there would be more resistance. I think a lot of people felt extremely defeated. A lot of them were exhausted from having just moved over from Ocheti, and now this, you know, was happening to them all over again, like a bad nightmare. Things went sort of peacefully. They did not give us enough time to remove a lot of our property, which has since been either confiscated or looted, unfortunately. So there's tens of thousands, maybe $100,000 or more in property that has gone missing that we are not allowed to return to get. Some of this was donated. Most of it was purchased by Sacred Stone Camp, which is a 501c3.
Karen Little Wounded said there is one water protector camp still open at Standing Rock, but many of the water protectors are taking time to heal and pray on the Cheyenne River Reservation. That's where Chair Harold Frazier opened the powwow grounds to the water protectors as a temporary camp.
You know, after the raids that happened the last few weeks of all the camps, Cheyenne River still has their camp, which is south of Ocheti Shekone, you know, up on the hill. And that's leased land that the tribe has, you know, leased from an individual. And so anyway, Chairman Frazier welcomed all the water protectors, you know, to Cheyenne River for those, you know, that, you know, we gave up our homes, you know, gave up our jobs, you know, and still really we have a fight to continue. So water protectors have been coming to Cheyenne River They've been welcomed at the Powell grounds. You know, the community has really welcomed them. We had a sweat ceremony last night, kind of, you know, just keep on healing. The water protectors that are here are going to D.C., as you know. And there's also a camp on the southwestern part of the reservation. And that one's located on private land.
Water protector Nasha is one of the many headed to D.C.
Majority of us are headed to D.C., and we are focused on creating more awareness that the movement continues and that we have momentum and it's not going to stop. We're also working on fundraising and just coming together again and figuring out what the next steps are. So it hasn't been yet decided what the next move is as far as where the water protectors are going to go, but there are many camps, and Cheyenne River is one of them to go ahead and fight against the Keystone Pipeline.
On Friday, a march of about 2 miles is planned from the Army Corps of Engineers office to the White House, where a rally is scheduled. Earth Mum, WBAI News, New York.
And one final note, civil rights attorney, WBAI local board member, 76-year-old Lynn Stewart's days appear to be dwindling. WBAI's Sally O'Brien visited Lynn yesterday. She said, "It's a very sad moment. I may have seen my friend for the final time. All I can say is that she kicked them in the teeth. They never stopped her strong revolutionary determination to resist tyranny, racism, imperialism every day of her marvelous life." Lynn Stewart suffered a massive stroke on Wednesday. She is resting comfortably at home. Her husband, Ralph Poynter, welcomes your emails, ralphpoynter@gmail.com.
A working class hero is something to be. Working class hero is.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, March 6, 2017. The news was produced with Rebecca Miles, Matt Bailey, Armand Echeverry, Earth Mum, Ben Max, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.